Hi, Rach Gomez here with a new edition of From the Bookshelf. Today we are continuing to read from the Motorcycle Diaries, A Journey Around South America by Ernesto Che Guevara, translated by Anne Wright and published by Verso in 1995. We are continuing reading from the chapter entitled This Time Failure. Lying in the meager shade of two lamp posts on the arid road leading to the mines, we spent a good part of the day yelling things at each other every now and again from one post to another, until we spied the asthmatic shape of the van which took us halfway to a town called Baquedano. There we made friends with a married couple, Chilean workers who were communists. In the light of a candle, drinking mate and eating a piece of bread and cheese, the man's shrunken features struck a mysterious, tragic note. In simple but expressive language, he told us about his 3 months in prison, his starving wife who followed him with exemplary loyalty, his children left in the care of a kindly neighbor, his fruitless pilgrimage in search of work, and his comrades who had mysteriously disappeared and were said to be somewhere at the bottom of the sea. The couple, numb with cold, huddling together in the desert night, were a living symbol of the proletariat the world over. They didn't have a single miserable blanket to sleep under, so we have them one of ours, and Alberto and I wrapped the others round us as best as we could. It was one of the coldest nights I've ever spent, but also one which made me feel a little closer to this strange, for me anyway, human species. At 8 the next morning, we got a lorry to take us to the town of Chuquicamata. We said goodbye to the couple who were heading for the sulfur mines in the mountains, where the weather is so bad and conditions so hard that you don't need a work permit and nobody asks what your politics are. The only thing that counts is the enthusiasm with which the worker ruins his health for a few meager crumbs. Although by now we could barely make out the couple in the distance, the man's singularly determined face stayed with us, and we remembered his simple invitation, "Come, comrades, come and eat with us. I'm a vagrant too," which showed he basically despised our aimless traveling as parasitical. It's really upsetting to think they use repressive measures against people like this, leaving aside the question of whether or not communist vermin are dangerous for a society's health. What had burgeoned in him was nothing more than the natural desire for a better life, a protest against persistent hunger transformed into a love for this strange doctrine, whose real meaning he could never grasp, but translated into bread for the poor, was something he understood and, more importantly, that filled him with hope. The bosses, the blunt, efficient, arrogant managers, told us in primitive Spanish, "This isn't a tourist town. I'll get a guide to give you a half-hour tour round the mine and then please be good enough to leave. We have a lot of work to do." A strike was in the offing, yet the guide, the Yankee boss's faithful lapdog, told us, "Stupid gringos, they lose thousands of pesos every day in a strike so as not to give a poor worker a couple of extra centavos. That will be over when our General Ibáñez comes to power, and a foreman poet. These famous terraces enable every scrap of copper to be mined. People like you ask me lots of technical questions, but I'm rarely asked how many lives it has cost. I don't know the answer, doctors, but thank you for asking." Cold efficiency and impotent resentment go hand in hand in the big mine, linked despite the hatred by the common need to survive on the one side and to speculate on the other. Maybe one day, some miner will joyfully take up his pick and go and poison his lungs with a smile. They say that's what it's like over there, where the red blaze dazzling the world comes from. So they say, I don't know. And let's continue reading from the chapter Chuquicamata. Tsuki Kamada is like a sense from a modern play. You can't say it lacks beauty, but it's a beauty which is imposing, charmless, and cold. As you approach the mine, the whole landscape creates a feeling of suffocation on the plain. There is one point at which, after 200 kilometers, the slight greeny hue of the town of Kalama, interrupting the monotonous gray, is greeted with a joy which, as an oasis in the desert, it richly deserves. And what a desert! The weather observatory at Moctezuma, near Tsuki, calls it the driest in the world. The mountains, devoid of a single blade of grass in the nitrate soil, defenseless against the attack of wind and water, display their gray backbone, prematurely aged in the battle with the elements, the wrinkles belying their real geological age. And how many of the mountains surrounding their famous brotherhood, similar, reaches deep in their boles, awaiting the arid arms of the mechanical shovels to devour their entrails, spite with inevitable human lives, the lives of the poor unsung heroes of the battle, who die miserable death in one of the thousand traps nature sets to defend its treasures, when all they want is to earn their daily bread. Tsukimata is essentially a great copper mountain with 20-meter-high terraces cut into its enormous sides, from where the extracted mineral is easily transported by rail. The unique formation of the vein means that extraction is all open cast, allowing large-scale exploitation for the ore body, which grades 1% copper per ton of ore. The mountain is dynamited every morning, and huge mechanical shovels load the material onto rail wagons on which it is taken to the grinder to be crushed. This crushing consists of three stages which turn the raw material into medium-sized gravel. It is then put in a sulfuric acid solution which extracts the copper in the form of sulfate, also forming a copper chloride which turns into ferrous chloride when it comes into contact with old iron. From there, the liquid is taken to the so-called greenhouse, where the copper sulfate solution is put into huge baths and submitted to a current of 30 volts for a week, which brings about the electrolysis of the salt. The copper sticks to the thin sheets of the same metal, which have previously been formed in other baths with stronger solutions. After 5 or 6 days, the sheets are ready for the smelter. The solution has lost 8 to 10 grams of sulfate per liter and is enriched with new quantities of the ground material. The sheets are then placed in furnace, which, after 12 hours smelting at 2000 degrees centigrade, produce 350-pound ingots. Every night, 45 wagons in convoy take over 20 tons of copper, each down to Antofagasta, the result of a day's work. And well, that's it from me for today on the bookshelf. I'm Rate Gamis.